to the Inside Show podcast, episode 420, man. So if you're one who partakes, go light up now. We've got a whole bunch of stoner metal for you this week. Seemed only appropriate. It definitely kind of puts off a little bit of our timely reviews and releases. Everything kind of got shuffled a little bit as we went on a quest to find some more appropriate things for this momentous occasion of an episode, coming from like two totally non-stoner dudes who don't even generally listen to stoner metal all that often. Whatever, it'll be the first time we've ever celebrated any sort of episode like landmark.
The next one's gonna be like 666, which we're a ways off from.
We'll have to make sure the world still exists by then, because we're all still inside and everything's getting worse. But we don't need to talk about that, because that seems to be a theme at the beginning of every episode. We're just going to gloss right over that. We've got a big episode for you this week. Three new albums. Three new to us albums. And also, we're doing our first Crew Nation segment, where later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Brian's wife, Mallory, to talk about her pick. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. First album this week is the latest from Valkyrie. The album comes out on July 24th on Relapse, and it is called Fear. We reviewed these guys a while ago, all the way back in episode 191, back in 2015, with their last album, Shadows, also on Relapse. Not a huge departure or change between releases, but still something that is very enjoyable for the more classic rock-oriented version of our subgenre theme for the week. Maybe a little less actual stoner rock, but I think it would still appeal to that same kind of classic throwback vibe and attitude. I would put this in the likes with, you know, not as somber and doomy as a Pallbearer, but would fit alongside nicely with them, or like Chemist if it never got screamy and if the songs were in the 6 minute range instead of the 9 minute range.
Right.
But it has that production, that classic rock vibe, that just really buttery guitar throughout with like really nice lead lines and intricate woven together song structures. This is really enjoyable on either level of digging and paying attention to the great songwriting and the hooks, or as something you throw on in the background and just let it wash over you. It works either way. It's enjoyable for both. I don't have a ton of notes on it beyond that, beyond to say I enjoyed this. This was a fun listen. This was easy. This was accessible. And, you know, we don't cover a whole lot of stuff that I would fit more into like the classic rock side of metal. And when we do, it needs to be of a certain caliber for us to not be like, you're just aping somebody else's shit that they did better 30 years ago. And this doesn't feel like that. This feels fresh. This feels original, but it also feels of a time period. And that's a hard line to walk. You know, it's kind of a tricky balancing act, and this band pulls it off very well.
Yeah, it's funny because Metal Archives has this Virginia band listed as heavy / doom metal. And maybe their first two albums, which were from back in 06 and 08, hit that mark, but I feel like Shadows and Fear are arguably not even metal. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as just to give you an idea again, because if they're on Relapse, who has dabbled into stoner and some classic rock stuff or more classic sounding things more recently. But like, it's, I feel like it might have been more alongside where Chemist and Spirit Adrift are on, what, 20 Bucks Spin? Like, they would have fit maybe even better over there. And, I mean, Nick's 100% right that they write classic rock, kind of stonery sound, like, light classic rock built around the riffs. It's all about, the guitars are front and center in what they're doing. There's some wonderfully written solos throughout the album that make these six plus minute songs not feel like 6+ minute songs. They're not wasting any time in these lanes. And a lot of it, for whatever vocal stuff are there, is filled mostly with instrumental passages. And they do it so well, there's no need to try to cover it up with anything. they definitely have the classic sound, but with modern production where you can hear everything. And it's a little dry, maybe, but not in a bad way. But it, like, the bass doesn't come through super thick. It's warm, but it's not like super heavy. And they're like, it, so it keeps the vibe of the sound they're working with. Yeah, I mean, this is an entertaining album that I think, like he said, is equally as rewarding if you're actively listening to it, especially the guitar parts and stuff, as or if you're just putting it on in the background after some classic rock music as you're doing whatever. Like, it's a solid album in any regard.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. This is staying at a 4 for me, which is, I believe, what I gave them the first time around.
Same.
Cool. All right, so with that, we're going to play the song Love Blind for you out on Valkyrie's upcoming release, Fear. Check it out. We'll be right back.
All right, so that was Love Blind by Valkyrie off their forthcoming album Fear. That is out on July 24th. Next up, we got a band that Nick actually found over on Bandcamp called Earth Diver. They put out an album on 420 called Lord of the Cosmos. They are a three-piece from Denver, Colorado. They've only been around since 2018. They had an EP out last year in 2019, and then this album. So there's not a heck of a lot of information about them out there besides what I just told you. But they're good. They play groovy, heavy stoner metal. Like, it's while Valkyrie was about, I think, the guitar work, especially lead lines and solos and stuff, this is about the fucking groove and the riffs. Mm-hmm. It gets a little aggressive in pacing and screaming vocals, but it's about, I feel like I could say much about this as I said about like Asthma Castle when we first talked about them. Like, I want to be in a local bar with a cheap beer. Like,
I want to be in a fucking house basement, dude.
Yeah.
Give me fine. A low ceilinged basement with this shit.
Yeah. I mean, whether the grooves are like in a part to stay cold is the lead track where it's a little faster, or they slow it down to halftime and Worlds Die Again. Like, it just works. Your head is just banging at different paces. You know, some fantasy lyrics, some a little more down to earth, such as Leave Something Witchy. I mean, if you look at their album artwork, which I wouldn't be surprised if they ever sold this on vinyl complete with blacklight, like, mm-hmm. It kind of tells you everything you need to know, with a Viking holding an orb that has some other knight riding a horse in it, and it's all done in like yellow, orange, bright blue and purple. Like, that's it. That's the album. That's what you need to know.
Yeah.
It's a blast to listen to. And the songs, you know, vary in length, but which gives it a little bit of diversity in it. Nothing feels overdone, including the 11-minute closer Crusader, which I didn't even realize was 11 minutes till right now.
Exactly.
Exactly. Like, if you're going to do an 11-minute song, make me not realize it. Like, I've listened to this 4 or 5 times this week, had no fucking clue. So,
yeah.
Kudos to you guys.
Yeah, this is my shit. I love this. Like, this has that perfect balance of just weighty groove and fuzzy guitar. Like, this is the type of band I want to play in. This is what I gravitate towards if I'm thinking something groovy. It has similar vibes to when we saw Dead Now open for... who did we see them open for?
Red Fang,
there we go. It had similar vibes to me of just like, this has groove. It had like... Immediately, I was like, yeah, we need this. And I just checked out originally the single that they have out right now, God of the Gallows, and then sent it to you. And I was like, hey, we should do this band. And we ended up checking out Lord of the Cosmos. But yeah, this is fun. Like, everything you said about it is accurate. It has just this wonderful bounce to it. The pacing and cutting to halftime at like just the right spots. Like, the simplicity of dialing back what you're doing for maximum effect of weight is great. You know, it's hard to walk that line all the time. I feel like this is the second time I've said that this episode, but like, knowing where to shift, like, just keep it simple and it will have more of an impact. And they do it perfectly. You know, the little bit more aggressive nature in the lyrics would be off-putting to some, but I think works really well for like the fuzzier, a little bit more sludgy side that we're getting of this particular iteration of stoner rock. This works so well for me. This is exactly the type of shit I want to be listening to right now. I ripped this so many times this week. This is easily a 5 for me. This is so much fun.
Yeah, I'll go with a 4, but I that's one of those things that, you know, I'm on the cusp of here. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this album. It's a great, fun stoner album, and we're gonna give you a sample of that right now. Check out the song Cut the Bone Away by Earth Diver.
All right, that was Earth Diver with Cut the Bone Away off their album Lord of the Cosmos. Sorry. And with that, that's going to take us to our first Crew Nation donation segment. We have a number of these that we're going to be doing, so we are going to skip doing our Black Label pick for the foreseeable future while we work our way through these. I'm sure we'll get back around to it again, but one segment replaces another segment. So for the time being, we're going to be doing these and doing one every episode. The first one, we are joined this week by Brian's wife, Mallory. Hello. Thank you for joining us. And she has selected Sgt. Pepper's by the Beatles. So I'm sure Brian and I will both dip onto what our experiences are with the band and obviously a review of it. But before we get there, I think how we should kind of frame this for this one and going forward is to have the guest explain their history with the album and why they chose it as a jump-off point for discussion, if that makes sense. Is that cool?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So that said, why the Beatles? Why this album?
Well, to be honest, I wanted to kind of troll you guys, and you didn't...
That's fair. We're getting a fair amount of that.
You didn't appreciate my four-hour Paul McCartney compilation pick, so figured the Beatles was the next best thing. Obviously, they're one of the greatest bands ever, and my favorite band, so I wanted to force you to get an education on it.
Totally fair.
I picked this album because it's personally my favorite. There's a lot of debate about the best Beatles album, of course. There's always going to be debates about the Beatles, but this is just my favorite album, personally, so.
Cool. Yeah, I, Brian, do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I can go first. Okay. So, living with Mallory, I can say I've been exposed to a lot more Beatles in the last few years than I have ever in the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. This is my first time having sat down and listened to an entire Beatles album front to back. And a couple notes overall on the experience is, one, with this album, as I think with a number of their albums, but this one in particular, to fully appreciate the album, I think anybody needs to understand when it came out, like right before the summer of 67, and have a general knowledge of music, pop music and art and pop culture and stuff at the time, which I can't say I had. I had to kind of read up on it. But if you don't know that, I feel it loses something. Especially, again, it's not that it doesn't age well. It's that the significance of it is kind of lost just listening to it casually. And it also helps to know that another reason it is so famous or infamous, legendary, is the production value of it, and the technical aspect that went to recording it is quite astounding if you know, have a clue as to what happened with it, because with having listened to music, you know, 50 years later, that is done, sounds similar in the end result, but was done in a much simpler way, you don't really get to appreciate it. So you kind of have to know that going into it. And for the latter, it makes a difference as to what version of the album you listen to. And yeah. Both Nick and Mallory were laughing at me because I ended up listening to four slightly different versions of the album.
Yeah, you went deep on it.
Yeah.
So as most people know, even if you're a casual Beatles fan, that everything was released in mono. And some of the later albums, including this one, were released also in stereo because stereo was starting to come around. Though most people didn't have stereo equipment and were listening to the radio on AM. For this album, the engineer noted they spent 3 weeks on the mono mixes and maybe 3 days on the stereo mixes. So, and I know one of Nick's friends, Chris, who's a Beatles fan, said you should listen to it in mono. So trying to find, there was two different mono and two different stereo versions we found. One's from remasters from 2009 and remasters from 2017. Nick and I both started in the 2009 stereo one and it was trash. I mean, that's a bit harsh, but...
It's not. So that's accurate.
If anybody has listened to it or hasn't, the stereo panning is so hard. Like, there's songs
It's straight up fucking bonkers. It makes no sense.
It also makes a difference because I haven't listened to it, you know, in headphones every single time. So you're going to notice it a lot more than if you're just playing it.
Well, but also I had on normal stereo speakers and like in Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, the drums are panned all the way to the left for
not the ride.
Huh?
Not the ride cymbal. There's one element of the kit, one solitary element of a cymbal that comes through on the other channel. Everything else is on the other side.
And
why?
Right. And then with a little help from my friends, the vocals start a little left to center and then they drift further left as the song progresses. And things like this happen throughout the album for no particular reason. Now, I didn't bother reading up further to see if that was close to the original stereo mix. But if they only put 3 days versus 3 weeks effort into it, that wouldn't surprise me. The 2017, which is the 50th anniversary stereo mix, is great. As is the mono version from that, which was direct transfers from the album's original mono mix. So clearly that's what they would have wanted you to listen to. It is different than the 2009 mono one, which you probably wouldn't expect, but it is. It's warmer, it's bigger, and probably the best way to listen to the album. And without going too much further into the production, it makes a big difference because I had a very different opinion the first two times I listened to this album than the last two times I listened to this album. Yep. And again, appreciating the technical detail, listening to it in mono the way they produced it is, again, incredible if you know what they did, which we can get into that talking more about the music itself.
Yeah, I had that same experience. So, story for Mallory, because I'm sure I've told Brian this before. I have almost no experience with the Beatles. I know the singles. I went through a very, very short-lived phase in, like, 1996 when they did that three-part anthology series that was on TV and listened to them. So that would have been sixth grade for me. And then quickly moved on because I got into, like, rap and nu metal. So, like, my knowledge of them is very limited. But I never cared that much. I don't go for poppy stuff that often. And granted, they moved away from being like bubblegum pop pretty quickly. But like that's kind of what I associate the Beatles with and always have. So I've never really cared about them that much. And anytime I mention that, my friend Chris, who I play in a band with that we've definitely mentioned on the show here, gets mad at me all over again because he manages to block that out. And then anytime I mention not caring about the Beatles, and I was talking about how you picked Sgt. Pepper's for this at our band practice last week, and mentioned that, you know, I really didn't know anything about it or have ever listened to it before. And he got like, he was like, God, I get so fucking angry every time because I forget that you don't like the Beatles. And he's like, you know, for somebody that does recording and mixing, you need to at least have appreciation for what they did, what they pioneered, and, you know, everything else that was coming out in that era, and then how they changed the face of music with their recordings. And I was like, all right, that's a very fair and valid argument. And then I went home and listened to the stereo mix and went, what is he talking about? This is trash. I have written off so many more bands for so much less of like, if you're going to make a choice for like, this is where my drum kit is going to be, that needs to be the album. It's going to be mixed that way where the drum kit is going to be inexplicably on the right with a cymbal on the left. But, like, that has to be what you do for the album. And they do it for just one song. And then they put it somewhere completely different for another one. It's like, you know, they got this new stereo technology and were like, let's just fucking try it. Finding out afterwards that, like, you know, yeah, they were experimenting. They spent 3 days on doing a stereo mix and it was really intended to be mono. I messaged Chris about it and was like, dude, what do you mean? This is painful to listen to. He goes, oh, no, nobody listens to stereo. Don't do that. And I was like, oh. Okay, so that's when Brian and I first started talking about the different mixes, and I went out and tracked down a mono one and gave it a fair shake. And yeah, as Brian said, it is so much better to listen to the way it's intended because it's not distracting. Like, I had a hard time trying to listen to what the songs were and the writing and the craftsmanship and all the other notable things that people talk about with the Beatles when I was being distracted by, you know, voices moving in willy-nilly directions and whatever else was going on. But once you get to the mono version, I really don't have many complaints about this album. I don't know that I will be going back and listening to it a whole bunch. There are some weird songs, for sure. I'm thinking of Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite. I'm not particularly a fan of. And the middle, probably, like, I really like the album up until She's Leaving Home, and then from Lovely Rita to the end. The middle three or four there kind of lose me a little bit. I don't know if maybe the album was reshuffled if I would like it a little bit better, but there, I don't know. I found some of the choices there a little bit weird. But by and large, I was fine with this. It also then made me go listen to more Beatles, which is something that I've never done. Because, you know, as soon as I told people I was reviewing Sgt. Pepper's, they're like, oh, you should definitely go listen to the White Album. So I did. Yeah. And then Chris was like, I think probably what you would like better would be Revolver. So I went and listened to that one. So I have spent more time with the Beatles in the last week than I have ever spent collectively in my entire life.
No Abbey Road?
I didn't get to that one yet because I had three other albums I had to review for this. But, so, okay. With that, I guess I want to know why this one is your favorite compared to the... I mean, I know this band has taken a million different directions, and as you said, everybody has a different favorite. But what is it about this one that kind of pulls you in? And you mentioned Abbey Road. Why would that be kind of the next one I should go seek out? Like, educate me a little bit because I'm pretty ignorant on this.
Well, I mentioned Abbey Road because it's, I think, probably... arguably, many people argue it's like one of their best ones, and you know, it's a popular one. And you were talking about all the other ones you listened to, and I was like, huh, he didn't go to Abbey Road. It was just more of a curiosity, although that is
okay.
A great album. So I keep wanting to like chime in when you guys are talking, and I can't like find a way to get in.
Feel free to cut me off anytime, that's fine.
But going back to Brian talking about, you know, appreciating the technicality and, like, you know, you're talking about, like, the technology and stuff and how they, you know, changed music. And it's, like, that's, like, really important to keep in mind when you're listening. Because at first glance, you know, you're like, yeah, the Beatles, you know, everybody knows the Beatles. And you're not gonna, like, really appreciate it because we have all this modern music in our head and all these things that they pioneered and that they invented, basically, have been in use in studios, like, since then. So it's not that, like, you know, surprising for us. It's not that revolutionary to us because we're familiar with, you know, layering tapes and stuff like that, having all those sounds. And like, they did that manually with like a tape that they recorded on, then put the tape in again and recorded on it again. Like, there was no technology.
And it was
like,
a 4-track tape, mind you, not even an 8-track
tape. Yeah. So it's like, there was no technology. This was them literally like, let's put this sound close to the amp and see like what it does. Basically, they were just like messing around, and obviously the drugs helped, you know. Paul McCartney had just started LSD right before this album started. John was on LSD before that. He was trying to get Paul to take it for a while, and then Paul finally jumped on the bandwagon right before this. So I think that explains a lot of the weirder songs, you know. But the appreciation for that, and also just, it's like a, it's just a really fun album for me. It's something that always puts me in a really good mood. And, you know, Lovely Rita is one of my favorite songs, and it just makes you want to, like, you know, bounce a little, and it just makes me happy. So, I mean, all of the Beatles make me happy, but this is like my go-to, like, you know.
Yeah, I think the, I mean, I was familiar, obviously, with A Little Help from My Friends. I think we sang that in, like, elementary school chorus or something. and I knew Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And the only other song I really knew off of this was A Day in the Life, which is my favorite Beatles song. So that was enjoyable to have on there. But I really didn't know pretty much anything else on here. It was all kind of a new experience for me. And reading a little more on, like, some of the influences and some of the different instrumentation they brought on, apparently George Harrison was really getting into, like, Middle Eastern stuff, which is where you get a song like With and Without You.
Yeah, he had just spent 6 weeks in India, and he was, like, that was something that, like, changed him for the rest of his life. Like, he was, you know, into that for the rest of his life. But yeah, and this first time that was played, like, on a pop song, a mainstream band in North America.
Right. I mean, that was going to introduce a whole, litany of people to sounds they'd never heard before, yeah. For sure. I can't say I particularly cared for it, but I mean, I get the importance and the significance. And that was kind of another note Chris had on it. He sent me a text about the album, just to give me like time and cultural awareness of like what was going on in other albums of the era. So I'm just going to read that text quickly, because it helped me kind of like find footing. So he gave me context. He said, Rubber Soul came out and started pushing the boundaries of rock music, both in terms of lyrical content that was personal and interesting, not just, hey, baby, let's twist, and also starting to get more sonically interesting. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys heard that and went absolutely bananas and went into the studio and recorded Pet Sounds, trying to top what the Beatles were doing and introduce more instrumentation and different interesting elements, setting an insane new standard for what kind of instruments and song structures were okay for pop and rock. Sgt. Pepper was the Beatles' attempt at one-upsmanship from that. That album came out between Rubber Soul and Sgt. Pepper.
We were actually just talking about that, how Brian Wilson heard that album and was like, whoa, and basically made, you know, Pet Sounds, which is, you know, an amazing album on its own. And then Paul McCartney heard that and was like, whoa. So it's just funny how there's the back and forth and the inspiration.
Yeah. So that was the other homework I did this week, because I don't know that I ever listened to Pet Sounds in its entirety. So I spent some time doing that this week as well.
See, I didn't do that. And I was saying last night, maybe I should have. And you're telling me I went too deep listening to different mixes. You actually went and did the history of this.
And listened to other Beatles albums.
Yeah. I mean,
no, it's good. Like I had.
That's the fun of this.
I had read that on the, or part of that on the Wikipedia too, that Pet Sounds kept coming up, and it's like, I know of the album.
Yeah, but, I mean, you definitely know some of the songs on there. Like, there's no way you could avoid it. Kind of like there's no way you could avoid knowing some of the songs off of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the album on a whole is definitely, I mean, if you didn't hate this, which I don't think either of us did, it's definitely worth going and exploring.
So
like, I'm ignorant of like this whole era. I mean, I kind of skipped. This wasn't what was on the radio at my parents' house, though they owned the entire vinyl discography of the Beatles and George Harrison and Paul McCartney. They owned all the solo stuff. Like, my parents were big Beatles fans. This just wasn't what was on the radio growing up, because it was, you know, it was a little earlier than what the classic rock station played. So beyond the big singles, I didn't have that much exposure to it. It was more like the Joan Jets and Heart and like that, just after this era that I grew up on. So other than like big singles of the time, I don't know much about like the mid 60s through early 70s version of rock. And I realize that's a huge gap in the evolution of music that I am like totally ignorant of and never really cared enough to seek out. And as I'm kind of getting older, I realize maybe I should have a little bit more awareness of where the origin story of the music came from. Because, like, you know, it's easy for a metalhead such as myself to go back and be like, well, anyway, I've gone back to Black Sabbath. That was arguably the first metal band. I'm good. I don't need to go from there. But obviously, they had influences and inspiration as well. They learned and stole the techniques of who came before them.
Right.
So, you know, it's sort of like not doing your homework to not go and be familiar with some of the other stuff. So I'm trying to slowly do that. And I've asked Chris and Corey, who are both, you know, big classic rock guys and into all the origin stuff, to kind of make me a 60s and 70s for dummies playlist that I should be more aware of to go explore.
Yeah, you'll have to share that with me.
I've mentioned that to Brian before. I'm like, you guys really should listen to it, because everything that you're listening to now, their influences and their influences and their influences going back, like, it was all from this era. These are the guys that were like pioneering this, and they even like literally, not every, but pretty much every genre, I think, can be influenced by this. Because it was a little rock, it was a little pop, it was a little, like, you know, everything.
Well, and that's one of the, so even going a little beyond the text Chris sent you, which is very helpful, is kind of what I was saying about needing to know what's happening around there to appreciate it. Because if I was to have listened to this album, not even the technical aspect of it, but listen to this album without any context, like we would review a new band almost, or a band that's been around a while we never checked out because we heard a song or two, I don't think I'd appreciate the songwriting so much. And it's weird. It's not, it's like bordering avant-garde in their approach to, like, it's a little bit of everything, which was the point. That's why they made up Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, is to, like, not be the Beatles and write whatever they wanted. But to put that all on an album, we've heard other bands try to do similar things. We're like, pick a fucking genre. Like, it's difficult to listen to. I will say this flowed better, but getting a song like Within You, Without You in the middle of the album, just going kind of out in left field stylistically, while and some of the other ones kind of, you know, reaching over here and there, you know, that's why it got praised, was for bringing like this artistic nature, the art rock to pop rock. But if you don't know that that wasn't there beforehand, you're kind of like, well, this is a weird album. It's okay. I don't want, like, on its own, I'm not sure I'd understand why any of these songs have stood up over 50 years. Because, like, they're not bad. And, you know, they're not something I'd turn off, save for, like, when I'm 64. I'm sorry, that song just doesn't fit on the album. As weird as this album is, it's so saccharine, and coming after Within Without You, it stands out.
That's
even
the tracking
more.
Error. Yeah. Yeah, I don't hate that song, except for the rhyme in the chorus is extremely lazy. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me? Like, come on, you could do better. You could do much better. But, like, it's the placement. If that came pretty much anywhere else on the album, like, that kind of saccharine attitude wouldn't be that much of a problem. But following the longest song by, you know, twice as long as anything else, that is, like, a weird, you know, Indian-sounding, quiet experiment to then be like, and here's the most bubblegum version of anything we're going to put on this album immediately after that, is real jarring every time.
Yeah. So, like, I, without its exact placement in time and why, you know, how the stars align, so to speak, and what they put into it, I'm not sure a lot of these songs would have stood up 50 years and people still loving them so much if it wasn't the Beatles, even. Like, if somebody else did it, because they're good, but I had trouble appreciating them outside of that as to, like, something, you know, huge. I have to say, Within Without You, I liked because it was a great example of the use of the layering, the tape, and bringing the techno aspect without being quite as weird as Mr. Kite. And it was a little dark. It had this, like, darker ambient tone to it, which I appreciated. One thing, actually, Mal, was hoping you could explain is, so we're actually, as we're listening to the album, as we're discussing this, we're at the Sgt. Pepper's reprise, which precedes A Day in the Life. Mm-hmm. And to me, that seemed like a weird tracking choice, and I didn't get it, and I'm not sure why A Day in the Life was the closer. Mallory seemed to have an answer to that.
So, first of all, here's a little anecdote.
That's good.
In England, a bunch of the universities were, you know, everybody was getting swept up in Beatlemania. And there's all this, you know, at first they were just, you know, poppy and I want to hold your hand and all that. And then they started evolving. And, like, you know, some of the, you know, people like to tear apart the lyrics and, you know, what did they mean by this and all that. So there actually were courses at some schools in England that were basically, like, dissecting Beatles lyrics. And John Lennon heard about that and was like, are you serious? Like, like, there's nothing deeper sometimes, you know? Like, it's just songs. And, you know, you're questioning the benefit of Mr. Kite. And the meaning behind that song is John Lennon saw a circus poster about a man named Mr. Kite, and all of the lyrics are from the poster. Like, this old circus poster. I think it was in, like, this old, you know, like, antique shop or something. He saw that and was like, huh, I'm gonna make a song about it. And that's all it is. So, like, sometimes it really is sometimes it really is just that. And it's not, like, yeah, they are, like, you know, talking about some deeper themes here, but sometimes it's just like, I saw a funny poster and it inspired me. You know, and the drugs.
And lots of drugs.
But another thing, this is a lot of times referred to as, like, a concept album. And, you know, they had just stopped touring, but right before this, because, you know, they were getting, like, death threats. This was after the whole The Beatles Are Bigger Than Jesus controversy. And they just weren't enjoying that type of lifestyle, and they were going and playing, and people were literally just screaming the entire time. Nobody could hear the music. They couldn't even hear themselves. John Lennon was basically like, you could send out wax figures, and they wouldn't know the difference. So, like, what's the point? So they stopped touring, they took a little break, and they all kind of did their own thing for a couple months, and then they started to do this. So this was kind of like a reimagining, like, literally. It's like, here's this new band. This is Sgt. Pepper's band, not the Beatles, you know, where we have our whole, the costume changes, we have, you know, we're, the hair's different, all this other stuff. And, like, this is Sgt. Pepper. This is their music. This is our way to, you know, reinvent ourselves, do completely different things, and experiment. So, you know, it starts out like that. It's like, here, welcome to the show. Welcome to Sgt. Pepper. So, and then it ends with the reprise, and that's the end of the show. And then, to answer your question, A Day in the Life comes at the end of it, after the show, after, you know, you've been immersed in this, like, you know, when you go to a concert, you're, like, in this other realm, and, you know, it's mm-hmm. a different experience, and then you go home, and it's, like, real life again. So after the reprise, the show is over, and then, you know, you're back to reality, and it's A Day in the Life. It's mundane. It's, there's tragedy. There's an accident, and it's just, like, to me, it's such a finale of a song. I don't understand how you can, like, question why it's the last song, because it has the whole, you know, quote-unquote dream sequence that's combining what was originally two completely different songs. John Lennon and Paul McCartney, they each had, like, one verse of the song, and they, like, couldn't put together the rest of the song. So they're like, let's just combine it, and let's, you know, find a way to string these together. And then, you know, it ends on that, like, that the pianos all playing the same chord. And it's just, it's such a finale to me. I never realized anybody could question why it's
because I guess I was following the concept of the Lonely Hearts Band, and then they started with, you know, with just that, and then ended with the reprise showing the show is ending, and I guess I didn't put together that that was real life for them after the show. Like, yes. Furthering
Sgt. Pepper's the fictional band, and then it's...
Right. I didn't realize it was actually furthering the concept of the whole thing. Now I appreciate that. I get that now. But I'm listening to, especially the lyrics in the beginning of the song, I'm like, this doesn't fit. I get it now. I didn't get it.
For the record, John Lennon hated that this was referred to as a concept album. He thought it was a load of crap. He's like, it's an album. We did stuff.
All right. I mean, that's all I got. Are we good?
Yeah, I think I'm good. I think we talked about this aplenty.
Cool.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to chime in on it? Any other notes you need to take away from it, or we good?
No, I don't think so. I am very glad that you guys took to this challenge so excitedly, and I hope you continue to do your research, not just on the Beatles, but other, you know, founding rock musicians.
Yeah. Yeah, I know some of the other albums we're going to be reviewing in the not-so-distant future I will probably not have the same appreciation, tolerance, and understanding for.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to be as open-minded as I can going into all of them. But, I mean, this was more of a, for me anyways, more of an awareness and updating preconceived notions than it was like, well, I know I'm actively going to dislike this. Like, I've just never really spent that much time with the Beatles mm-hmm. for no other reason than their catalog is huge, their legacy is daunting, and it's of a time period that predates me by a long shot. So it was never like I hate the Beatles is not a sentence I've ever said before. It was just, I don't really care enough to put in the legwork. So having a reason to do that was, you know, was fun. And it was very educational. And I've gotten to talk to a lot of people, a lot of friends who do care about them and get an education and different viewpoints and favorite album opinions from a whole bunch of people. And that's cool. So I enjoyed this.
That's another thing that they kind of have working against them. It's like, you know, they're so ingrained in, you know, culture and in music history that it's like, you know, it works against them because people are like, yeah, I know the Beatles are great, I know, but it's like, but have you really listened to them and like, do you understand why, or are you just taking it like because 50 years of people and, you know, historians and music professionals have told you, and you feel like you don't really need to dig deeper for yourself, you just take it as it's for granted.
Cool.
But anyway.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And
I think that's it. Thanks for having me and reviewing my album.
Welcome. And for the listeners, if you want to get in on this, go to the website, sideshowpodcast.com, click on the Crew Nation giant button logo thing at the top, and look at the tiers we have for donating, and you could make us listen to something metal, something not metal, and you could also join us for an album like this while also helping a great cause. So you should also go have fun with that. Thanks, babe. And with that, we get to our last stoner album of the week. And that comes from a band called Custom Black with their album Saxon Lady. Custom Black is from Kansas City, Missouri. They have been around since at least 2014, which is when their first single came out. They got two albums under the belt, this one and one called Smoke Shall Rise from 2017, which kind of, you know, also furthers the point of why we chose them.
This feels the most traditionally stonery of the three bands to me.
Yeah, that's true. They're not quite as aggressive overall, but one of the things I loved about this album, besides, you know, the production value and everything, is the range in their writing. So every song is catchy. This album is less than 29 minutes in 7 tracks, so it is quite short. But all 7 songs are catchy and in their own way, because there's a range from just the slower, more trudging, doomy-ish stoner sound to a song like the one we're going to play, Cold Machine, which is a little more upbeat and rockin', which I love equally as much. And that's what really struck me about this band. I mean, their chops are in league with, you know, what we just discussed in Earthdiver and, you know, Valkyrie in the, you know, in their own way. But they wrote a fun album that pulls from a few different places in their songwriting. And this is, I guess, more what I was hoping for when finding a stoner band. I ended up choosing this one. And yeah, you can rock out. Again, I'm going to keep referencing them because I just listened to it. But a song like Saxon Lady reminds me of what drew me to Asma Castle. I know it's weird I referenced them twice, but it just, the way it just gets in there with a galloping riff early on and makes your head bang, like that's what I was looking for. And the traditional stoner elements of the rest of the album all mixed in just works super well for me.
Yeah, I think the other thing that kind of lends a little bit of weight to me thinking this is the most traditional sounding of the three that we checked out is that the vocal melodies and really the range, kind of like timbre of his voice, is the most reminiscent of like early Ozzy. Like okay, this has more of a Sabbath-y vibe. Absolutely. To it, which is like, you know, not only the first, but like kind of the quintessential version of what we're dipping into here. So like, while the writing does definitely have a larger range and doesn't really sound anything like Black Sabbath, like there's that vocal element kind of ties it all together, because the vocal performance, while really good, is not super duper varied. I mean, he doesn't get into like really screamy stuff or really change beyond like the clean kind of mid high register. And it has a very similar cadence and vocal pattern that allows the band to try a whole bunch of different elements, but keep it rooted in that. And his tone of that is similar enough to Sabbath where like, it just like, it keys right into like, oh, this is what I think of when I think of a stoner album.
Fair enough.
It worked well. You had a good pick here. I will say we had 6 or 7 albums in the running for this week, in addition to Valkyrie, which we knew we were doing. And I would have been content reviewing any of them. They were all very enjoyable and very different versions of a similar genre, which makes me think we need to do this more often. Because there's a wide variety. We don't do it very often where we talk about doing, oh, let's do an all black metal review. Let's do an all whatever. There is a lot of room for variation and nuance within the tag of stoner. Because it can lean heavy into the doom. It can lean into the classic rock. It can be fuzzier. It can, you know, whatever. There's a lot of modifiers that you can put on there. And I think we found some pretty diverse versions of that.
Yeah, so there was the one we simply couldn't do because the album wasn't out yet. I already forgot the name of it. You found that one. Then there was Elephant Tree, which was a little more poppy, dreamy, as like almost the lighter sides of Torch, kind of. An Acid Mammoth, which, great name. And their logo was awesome with the tusks coming out. But that was a little even heavier and more aggressive than some of the others. So, like, yeah, there is a lot of stoner styles we could definitely dip into. I wouldn't mind doing this again for... I guess it can't be numerically themed, but we just feel like it. Or, you know, if releases get slow later this year or something happens, we can pick up where this left off. But, so the Custom Black, though, what are you giving it?
Custom Black. This is a 4 for me. This is really good. This is a lot of fun.
Same here.
Yay!
So that does it. So next week, we actually know what we're doing next week. So if you want to play along with us, we're going to be checking out Bury Tomorrow, this new album, Cannibal. Haunt has another new album.
Somehow.
Flashback. Yeah, we kind of have to do it on the fact that we already reviewed them this year, so it'd be wrong of us to ignore this one. And Nightingales are back with a new album, actually comes out on the 24th, called Dawnlight Garden. I'm looking forward to that one. And we will have another Crewnation pick, which that one we will not tell you. You're going to have to come listen to that. So, again, if you'd like to have some fun with us while donating to a great cause to help out the crews of the concerts we're not having while we're still fighting this pandemic, go to thesideshowpodcast.com and click the link the big Crewnation button up in the top corner. It'll tell you some of the fun perks we have in our different tiers, and every penny you give will ultimately be given to Crewnation. There's tiers for picking just a metal album from this year, a metal album from any year, or what seems to have been the most fun among my wife and friends is the tier where you can pick any album of any genre of any time. So, spoiler, you're getting a bunch of that in the coming episodes. I also have that link up on our profile on Instagram, and I know it's been shared through Facebook, so you can interact with us over on those places as well. One last thing, as a reminder, we do another podcast with our friend Mike called Horror Scouts, where we review horror movies. It's a lot of fun, and there's a high probability you like horror movies because you're a metal fan and listening to this. That's just statistics. So you can go to horrorscouts.com or find the podcast over on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, right? Yep. And and
all the places you can't find this plus the ones you can.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's a good time. We just reviewed, I think, The Lodge is what's up there. So you can go check out that latest one. And we got a new one coming in a couple weeks. So horrorscouts.com, go check that out. With that, we are going to leave you with the song Cold Machine by Custom Black. It's off their album Saxon Lady. Check it out, and we'll see you next time for episode 421.